This is Daz Davis, and you are listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Great pull, kid.
Hold your breath, hang on for dear life, and catch the hawk.
Good play, Junior.
Bruce Willis, Danny Aiello, Andy McDowell, Hudson Hawk.
Sounds like a party.
You've seen the show, and like us, you have questions.
Ooh, that was a good one, but try this one on for size.
No question should be left off your list.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I got a crazy theory, but hear me out.
But you better have some spares.
Oh, that was one of mine. All right, let's do this instead.
With me, as always, is my friend and Card Squadron winger.
This is Greg Cass, a.k.a. Ion Cannon.
We've recorded at home and across the U.S.
Last summer, we were from the Boston Common. This week, we're in Chicago.
This is day three of celebration.
The show has had many names, but the purpose is the same. Let's share some time at the table.
Ding, ding, it's time for breakfast.
Welcome to The Breakfast Pack, a Rebel Base Card micro podcast series.
A returning Star Wars insert podcast series that asks more questions than it answers, except today. Today on Breakfast Pack number 75, I forgot to change that, we're asking questions on The Bad Batch Season 3 episode Juggernaut that aired on Disney Plus Wednesday, April 10th. With me again at the breakfast table and ready to defend this episode to his dying breath is my partner in crime and Card Squadron ringer, Gregory Cass. We're not going to make it through this episode. From IonCannon.com. And hey, come on, this is 12 episodes in. We can get a little punch at this point. But Greg, outside of really hoping to get a new computer, how are you doing?
I'm good. I did just off Star Wars land. I did get a promotion this week, so I realized I should demand a new computer as a part. I say I will take my new title, but only if I get a new computer. But things are good. I mean, I'm living in a Phantom Menace dream right now. Right? I feel like everything's aiming towards that 25th anniversary and celebrating and. There's books, there's everybody's podcast seems to be pointed towards kind of marking the occasion. And, you know, I think I'm somebody who had mixed feelings in 1999, but, you know, it's hard to be mad about any of those things 25 years later, right?
What are you holding on to?
Every once in a while, you hear somebody grumbling on the internet. They're like, remember the crawl says the taxation of outlying? And it's like, dude, like, let it go. Like, it's done. It's over. So, I am doing a guest spot on a different podcast this week, and so I was just about an hour ago watching some Phantom Menace and taking some notes. So it's exciting and good to be living Star Wars. And I did like this episode of Bad Batch, though I don't know about defending it to my dying breath.
Well, I'll tell you. And the other trick about Phantom Menace is not to have had a podcast 25 years ago, because I'm sure some of my thoughts. Okay, the first one I was half in the bag, and so I really, you know, I enjoyed a lot about that night, not the next morning. But I would say the subsequent ones, I think everyone was kind of like, okay. But one thing I would say with the years is that, you know, my opinion of it and seeing everybody who's really kind of grown up with it and enjoy it and really love the prequels, I kind of really dig that, and I've done a hard 180 on it. There are some moments in all three of them, but then again, you could say that about all the films, really, especially 9, but that's not this program. But anyway, but one thing I am happy about, since we're talking about the prequels, is our guest for this breakfast. I'm so excited to have Anthony King from Forced Ghost Conversations with us, who is not shy to talk about M counts or midichlorians. Although I know we don't have Mrs. Forsco's conversations. Shout out to her who keep you company. But Anthony, thank you for joining us for breakfast today.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for having me on here, Gregs. And this is just a wonderful... I actually really like this episode, too. So I thought it was a fun little romp in the Bad Batch universe. So happy to defend it as well. But again, I don't know to the point of how much I want to defend this in terms of the overall story that it presents. But I think it did hit some points that are valid. And yes, midichlorians are back in fashion again. So this is a great time to be alive.
Exactly. All right. And if you are joining us for the first time, this is an insert series podcast in the regular feed where Greg, Anthony, and I are going to trade questions to each other that we have not talked about before, which means there's a chance, like a fantasy draft, to swipe that question from another member of the panel. So you better have some spares. Tonight, a kooky theory or two may help pad that list, or at least a good cheat sheet. And I'll remind anyone, if you haven't seen the latest episode, won't take long. This is a warning that there will be spoilers for this show. And if you haven't watched yet, I'm really not giving this one a fair shake. We invite you to please come back and listen after you have watched. Now, normally, this is the point of the podcast where we talk about the Greg's List. You know, these are people out there in the community who are doing all good things, whether it's in print, on the web, or on another podcast or whatnot. But since we have kind of like a Greg's List member, Anthony, I'd like to talk to you about Forest Coast Conversations and what you cover over there, and let people know what's going on.
Yeah, so happy to chat about the podcast that I host. So I host Forest Coast Conversations. It is I like to call it a cozy place for deep dive discussions into all things Star Wars, but we'll also talk about adjacent Lucasfilm things too. So Indiana Jones, your Willows, I may even do American Graffiti episode in the near future. Who knows? If it touches the Lucasfilm or feels like it's in the realm of a Lucasfilm, so maybe like the creator or something we'll talk about in the future. But we'll dive into the themes and what we can really take from these grand adventures that are taking place in a galaxy far, far away, and try to distill the things that we can use in our day-to-day lives, which I think is the real big themes that we should be taking from these fun adventures and just having a great time discussing them and also learning from them and making ourselves better people at the same time.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, I know that you've recently did some upgrades to the studio. You know, let me ask you this. For your sometimes co-host, Mrs. Forest Coast Conversations, how does she feel about all this? And kind of like, what's her kind of role on the show?
So I'll say first and foremost, I'm very thankful that she encourages and supports the work that I do here. For some reason, I got the brain to have an idea where I was like, I'm going to do a Star Wars podcast amidst the plethora of other Star Wars podcasts that are going on in 2021 or 2022, somewhere around that range. And I also was in the middle of a full-time job myself. And then I also was in grad school getting my master's degree at the same time. And I thought, well, why not add a podcast to that mix too in my copious amounts of free time? And she's been very supportive along the way. You know, I have an allotment of fun money a month that I kind of devote to podcasts, whether it be getting a new microphone set up, as you can see here, or the new camera that you're seeing me with visually here. Sorry, audio listeners, but it's just been very great. And we also have my new studio. We have a home now in Central Florida that I'm able to just kind of have my own space for. I've got my own bookshelves where I can now have on display all my trinkets from the Star Wars galaxy. I can see my galaxy's Edge lightsaber that I crafted over there, as well as just some Indiana Jones relics and some 3¾-inch action figures that I've been collecting. And happy to continue growing my collection too. Now I've got these custom-made bookshelves in here. Floor to ceiling is pretty cool. Mrs. Forest Coast Conversations loves the Bad Batch. This is her Star Wars. She's like, if any guest is coming on the show, it's me to chat about this. So she has full control over the Bad Batch discussions during the time. So she only has a few more episodes left, according to how they plan to end the show after the 15th episode this season. So it's been a great run with her, and she always, of course, is welcome anytime on the podcast to chat. But she was like, this is it. This is mine. She has the Lula stuffed animal that she has on the couch with us when we watch the show. And it's just been a real delight to both, you know, enjoy the show with her and just to have these wonderful conversations on a weekly basis about it.
Any good Star Wars room has a whiteboard. I've been dying to know for the last 10 minutes. What does the whiteboard say? Or are you allowed to talk about the whiteboard? Is that the secret? Is that the secret to Forest Coast Conversations, unlike me, organization? Is this an organizational thing that I can crib?
It sure is. And it's something that I have taken from my day job, which is being a project coordinator. So I have to definitely keep myself on track and on top of things when it comes to just paying the bills. So it is my upcoming episodes chart, or at least what I hope to get to in upcoming episodes. So I've got a long list of that. I've got a list of like artwork that I want to do inspired by the Forest Coast Conversations tagline, upcoming guests that I have on the show. So both Gregs are actually on the list here. You'll be getting a DM one of these days about an upcoming episode to be on. You've been forewarned.
Greg, he has a list. Is this like, we've been doing this thing for what? We've been doing the breakfast pack for 3 years. We don't have a list, man. I think we are sorely out of this. I think it starts.
The problem is you need friends first in order to have people to DM. So
every time it gets me. That's the thing I'm missing.
And while I'm on the mic, I want to say I spent a lot of last summer with you in my ears for the Indiana Jones episodes, which I thought were fantastic and were great to get excited about. And then I think prior to that, I mean, I'd kind of internet met you through the CWK group, I think. And I tried some episodes just before that, I think, where you were actually by yourself for like a solid 2 hours. And I just was, Lord, I was like, I cannot imagine the stamina of doing that. So I know that's not like your normal format, but like, kudos to you for doing that and managing that when you do, because that's just, I mean, maybe you just edit it and it's little 5 minute chunks, but I can't do that.
I'll tell you what, no, that was a straight shot. And to add more to the stamina of it, I was actually, at the time, we were in our apartment in D.C., and I was recording in our closet on the floor. 2 hours sitting crisscross applesauce on the floor. let's just say my back was hurting for a little bit after that, but always fun to chat anything in the Lucasfilm. And I just get off on tangents and rails and all that stuff. So, it's, you know, 2 hours flies by like that sometimes.
Nice. And the other a really, really important question is the Galaxy Edge lightsaber. What theme is it? What'd you go with?
Ooh. I'm pretty sure Peace and Justice, if I remember correctly. This was the day before Celebration that I went and did it, and it was a life-changing experience. And we're like, we have to move to Florida. So now I'm 20 minutes away from Galaxy's Edge.
Oh, beautiful. I got to go through with my son, and so I agree, life-changing. It's absolutely beautiful. I think a lot of people probably hesitate with the price tag on it, but I would say worth every penny. And,
absolutely.
You know, you can spend that easily at a popcorn stand inside of Disney World anyway, so might as well get something really real. But my regret is I let the 8-year-old make the decision. So we got a very 8-year-old, the science and nature one, nature and harmony theme. So it's got like Bantha horn on it and dewback leather, and it's not my choice. So I think I would have gone one of those other routes, but it is a really great experience. And so I have display behind me the Stellan Geos, and I do have to beg and barter with the 8-year-old to borrow his blade when I want to
use
wanna
it. Ignite
so,
it.
Yes. So it came full circle and I've paid my price.
That's like me when I take my plastic Kylo Ren lightsaber to cosplay with, and there are times where I want the plastic blade attached and others where I'm like, nah, I'm just going to hook the, you know, it has a little hook on it that I can hook on my, on the strap of my, you know, Matt the Radar Technician vest. And I'm like, no, I'm good with this. You know, I would still say, I think, like, because I have the Holocron that I picked up, and I think that is... that's like the best $50 right there. I was hoping that the Disney Springs stores might have Kyber crystals, but it's only going to be at the park, because it's like you know, the that I think is a great value as well. And I need to get the Sith Holocron when I get back to Batuu one of these days. When I can basically take me, sort of like I have to pay an extra two or three bills for everybody else. But at any rate, but that's cool. It was just down in Central. It was just down in St. Pete a couple weeks ago. So yeah, drove all over Central Florida. So good.
So you probably drove past us. We're over in Champions Gate. So you definitely drove past if you were going to Disney Springs.
Yeah, and basically would probably have stopped and could have probably walked over to your place, because when, you know, the parking lot, it is I-4, you know, you could just get out there and you could probably have walked to Lakeland a lot faster than you drove it.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway. All righty. You know, something else, and for those of you who are listening, still listening, thank you very much. I appreciate all comments, and I'm sure I would feel very bad in asking you for that 5-star rating on this one. I'm like, but yeah, you know, give it a shot. You may enjoy this. But I have the background I have for a reason, and this one is the movie poster for one Hudson Hawk, starring Bruce Willis. This is a 1991 action/comedy, and the reason I kind of put that behind me is that after I finished Juggernaut, that was the first thing that kind of came into my mind. Hey, sometimes in the shower when the water hits, the brain starts to work, and you just kind of roll with it. So there we go. But I remember coming out of that movie just really liking it, and I got to see it in the theater. That's how old I am. But I was amazed on how it got panned. I mean, it got panned bad. But I started thinking about the expectations of people who had finished watching Bruce Willis in Die Hards 1 and 2. Of course, The Last Boy Scout wouldn't have come out for another few months, but it was in the same year. But I think a lot of folks went into Hudson Hawk, not really paying attention to the trailer that was kind of funny, but there was a lot of action, and said, why is this kind of a lark? And, you know, by the way, if you haven't seen it, Richard E. Grant is in it. So there is your Star Wars thread for this one, who does an amazing job in that movie, hamming it up. If you haven't seen Hudson Hawk, I do recommend renting it. Buy it if you want. Maybe there's director's commentary. I don't know. But I just thought about the expectations that even I had going into this one after we set it up. And you can listen to last week's episode where we're kind of like, we're mapping it all out because, all right, got four episodes left. We got all this. And then I got basically what I asked for. And I'm like, why am I unhappy with this? But maybe the saving grace is that I think in some cases, I think we got what we expected, but in smaller, even smaller chunks than we thought. You know, Greg can attest to that. We thought we were gonna need a shorter resolution because we knew Hunter was gonna be pissed, and then we got it, and then we got Fee right away. Well, how are they gonna get off the planet? Fee comes back right away. So those are the kind of things I think when I'm thinking of Hudson Hawk and how much I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed this one at Batch. I'm giving it a little bit of a hard time, but I don't think I'm gonna be alone. When we go, like when we finish this and we start listening to other podcasts and seeing things, I'll be very curious about the reactions of others because we got the Bad Batch. This is the Bad Batch we know and love, but it was a little different than it seemed an odd placement to me. Now, before we get into the questions, since I kind of done this and we're not padding for time. Greg or Anthony, do you have any sort of like maybe opening statements? We'll crib somebody else's podcast. I don't know who does that, but I don't care about this before we dive into the questions.
Yeah, I'm happy to take a start here. I just think that this was, I'm glad that this episode didn't linger too much on like the dwelling on the negative of the situation. And they just went straight into the action of like, all right, we need to get moving. How do we get this? And just the plot points just kept moving along here. So, you know, whether you're appreciative of the answers or not, or just how it all came together, or you're just like, there wasn't enough in this episode. I need more answers, which I think is a very valid thought to be having and a criticism perhaps for the episode in the series. But, you know, at the end of the day, like you said, it's a fun Bad Batch episode. There's a lot of great action. It's great to see them as a team working together again, especially with Crosshair in the mix. You don't really get a whole lot of that this point. So good to see them working again in tandem in some regard. Fee's back in the fray a bit, and we kind of have some resolution from the last week's episodes. And now we can head straight into this three final episodes that we got coming up here. So overall, pretty good.
I think that is very resonant with what I was thinking about it. And to me, I think it is those two facts together, right? We are all counting down in our head and we're at four episodes remaining. And so it feels like we need to be moving perhaps a little faster than this episode ultimately does. But I was surprised kind of in hindsight that a lot of this action sequence was in the trailer, right? Like we've known this piece was coming. And I was kind of asking myself why that was. And I realized like, well, there haven't been big splashy action, set pieces as much this season as some of the previous ones. There's been action and it's been intimate, but I think one thing that this does have is you could make it you could hide that Crosshair was there, whereas like a lot of the other action scenes would have given away previous plot points of the season. So those are probably some of their motivations. But I will say, I was worried about spoilers today. So I did the I was in my office at I think about 6:45 watching this on my iPad and got a viewing in just so that the internet couldn't spoil it. And then, whenever I make that call, it's always one that's like, oh, they really couldn't have spoiled this at all. I did get a second viewing in this afternoon and it's kind of light and breezy and just a heck of a lot of fun. The 8-year-old is not involved in Bad Batch at this point. He gave up on it. I think this is one the kids would have enjoyed and have a little fun after last week. But I completely agree with what both of you pointed out. I mean, after last week, I was like, what's going to happen to Pabu? And after this week, it's like, I don't know what happened to Pabu. Like, you know, they kind of said the cruiser was hanging out but that seemed more like a plot point to prevent them from just flying away or having comms that they needed to sneak out. And so there's that kind of threat lingering in the air of the commander there saying to the mayor that Pabu was going to pay a price. And maybe we'll get to see it, but there's just three left. So, you know, at this point, I think it's clear they're not going to wrap up every single little thing fans have endlessly speculated about. But that's just the nature of Star Wars these days. Did we redeem it for you, Greg? Do you feel a little better?
I feel better. I think it's just one of those where sometimes you kind of check yourself of like, how do I feel about this? And, you know, and like, especially because, you know, you're waiting for everybody else to kind of get in with us, you know, to do the episode. And you're sort of like, should I feel how I feel? How should I feel? And sometimes it's pretty like you kind of go, whoa. And there's the text threads and some of these, you're kind of like, So that was just something. And I think, and I'm writing it more than it should, but it's just one of those where, not everybody has a podcast that they can kind of talk out their feelings with. So I feel myself very lucky that I have some people that I can bounce this one off. But it is, like I said, some things it kind of like brought up some questions. And I guess we should probably start those questions. for those of you at home who are, you know, that's our shtick, right? So we probably better get to it. So we're going to let our guest kind of start it off. I don't know how many rounds we're going to get through, but I am curious what you're going to lead off with, Anthony.
All right. So, was Admiral Rampart returning on anyone's bingos cards? I mean, I honestly was like, I forgot about him to a certain degree until, I'll be honest, yesterday in the shower, my shower thoughts, I was like, whatever happened to that guy? What
it's
is
a new segment
return?
We're having
is
on
he...
the podcast.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, he was kind of very important and then just wasn't at all. So I don't know if he comes back or if he's going to be in a comic or something like that years down the line. But I just thought that the inclusion of him in this episode as an answer to where Tantus is was pretty well done. But I'm like, wow, I was not expecting that one. If you'd have told me that at the beginning of the season, I'd been like, all right, sure. In a kind of a piggyback one to that, like, what do we do with him after this point now that he's kind of back in the fray again?
I had it on my bingo card, but I had mustache, not beard. Dang it. So I don't get credit for it. Maybe next season. Oops. I completely agree with what you said. I thought this was a great surprise. And actually, just where I'm saying, oh, it's not going to wrap up all the things we've been obsessed over, here it is picking up one that I didn't see any internet chatter wondering about. I think after Rampart had made his exit, then people thought he was gone. I am really interested to see where this plot line goes because when I had watched it this morning, I kind of remembered it as they get off the planet and he gives them the information. And then in the rewatch, it's like, oh, no, like he's got maybe an idea of possibly how to get the information. Yeah. And so that the continued dynamic between Rampart and Crosshair will be excited to see, because I thought that dynamic worked really well. But that dynamic also makes me nervous that if he can't deliver, I don't think Crosshair is going to let him live or hang out, even though that's a little darker than the batch has been behaving. I will put a second piggyback on that as we pass it to Greg and say, like, can we trust anything out of this guy's mouth? Because he seems to already have deceived the batch a little bit. And is this all, just some kind of way for him to get back in the good graces of the Empire?
Mm. I tell you, if he didn't bother to learn his coworker's language, there you go. I mean, you want to say, like, that's a lousy coworker right there. I mean, that beard will get you in a lot of places. And I was, like, having some beard envy on that because, like, okay, Rampart looks you know, pretty fine. He's got the mussed-up hair, the mustache and beard. But then he starts talking. You're like, okay, that's an Imperial. Not only did I not have this on my bingo card, Anthony did a nice job of swiping a question almost verbatim. I'm like, wow, nice. All right. He's played this game before. And that was, but I think that goes to speak to the fact that nobody saw this coming. I love surprises like this. And I, you know, like part of me was thinking like, all right, somebody in the writer's room had this idea. Now you could argue like, we could have come, you know, like, did they kind of like lean into it this one?
Sure.
But I do love the fact that he's very Rampart. Like, he's not like one of those like, oh, thanks for getting me. He's like, he's not on board. So I like that there are plans within plans. I don't know where that's from. I forget. Is that a Dune reference? Oh yes, that's a 1984 Dune movie line. We see plans within plans.
I think it's Hudson Hawk from 1991.
There we go. I will sing the rest of my question will be sung to the time of a song that I will choose later. Can you freaking believe it? I think a Danny Aiello line. But I would just say that I did not see Rampart coming. I like where this is going, and it's one of those where I'm like, that's a callback. I mean, you know, that's a nice callback, but also it got me thinking here. Let me actually come up with a decent comment on this. When I was thinking about why they're not laying waste to Pabu, and I'm sitting here going, that's a pretty dark tone, Greg. You're disappointed that they didn't level the island. But then I thought about the fact that, you know, he did order, you know, the destruction of Kamino, of the cities of Kamino, got put on trial for after he got thrown under the bus. So it is an interesting kind of the way they can get out going, the Empire just leaving. Although you could also argue that that was, yes, it was the Empire, but it was more of the Hemlock's army, Empire army. So they're not really into the whole day-to-day stuff. And I also kind of thought that, well, since there was Scorcher, but there wasn't necessarily another, you know, throwaway Imperial that would have stayed behind with a partial garrison or something like that. They're like, no, we got what we want. It appears the batch is dead. We're not going to go take a look. We're pretty satisfied. Of course, when the CX clone leaves, operative leaves, you know, that kind of take them. We're like, oh, I guess we got to go. I do think that Rampart helps kind of, I think Rampart may have indirectly saved Pabu, now that I think about it. So yeah, there we go. That's what I've got. That's why people don't like Hudson Hawk, because they come conveniently to those conclusions. And there we go. We bring it back to Hudson Hawk anyway.
It always comes back to Hudson Hawk. I like what you guys are, I like what you're saying here. And it's an interesting concept of like, what is Rampart's like end goal here by helping them? Like, is it to get in the Empire's good graces again, or is it to supersede Hemlock and get his job back, kind of in a certain way? Like, just is it using the Empire against the Empire, like the deceit and the lies, all that stuff, in order to one up each other? Or is it him just trying to get a job and not be in a prison anymore, and just kind of like, you know, is it better to clean the floors of a Star Destroyer versus being wherever he was mining at and doing that, right? I don't know. I think we'll have to answer those questions over the course of the next couple of episodes, if they even do.
Well, on my phone just now, breaking news, StarWars.com announced Rampart, a Star Wars story. So it'll be the next series. It'll be a spin-off.
Tales of the Rampart.
Hey, if Richard E. Grant gets to play Rampart, I'm down.
good question to start with, and really a fun one. I was thinking about the difference between these fan service cameos and Rampart returning, right? That there's something when the show returns to the characters it's created that feels a little more genuine and a little hearty. So, all right. I'm going to pretend that was a transition to my first question. So I'll jump in, and this is a game, man, do I play this game too often. So maybe Greg even expected it, but I want to know your thoughts on the title, Juggernaut, not just the X-Men reference of it all, and avoid saying the line to get us the explicit tag. Don't say that. But I was thinking a lot about the Juggernaut. And so I'm going to answer my own question to just say there's a very easy answer, which is the turbo tank is often called the Juggernaut, right? I'm so excited.
You just
I'm
like saying Juggernaut is what you like.
So, taking a page from all of my students who like to start essays this way, I will say
Juggernaut.
Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines Juggernaut as a massive, inexorable force, campaign, movement, or object that crushes everything in its path. I thought that was a fascinating definition of Juggernaut, and it made me want to ask you both, like, what is the Juggernaut of the title of this episode?
Oh, Greg, you broke me there with that dictionary definition.
I think that's a drinking game. I think that's what it is. Kids, every time you listen to this episode, and I'm going to put it in the description, take a shot every time we say juggernaut. There we go. You're welcome.
You know, I think this is a question that I was kind of pondering, too, because some of these episodes have been very straightforward about, like, all right, I can get that's exactly what they meant by that. This one, I guess my brain immediately went to the juggernaut of the Imperial machine that's just everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. When we're seeing this mining facility with prisoners and stuff like that, and just how difficult it is to find Tantus and how widespread everything is for the Empire. That's where my brain immediately was like, okay, they're talking about the Imperial juggernaut itself and how difficult it is to traverse it when you have no idea where you're trying to find a needle in the haystack.
I'm sorry, I thought they were talking about the tank. That's all I got. Oh my God. How many episodes? 75. This is the last one. I'm terrible. No, it is interesting. I love the fact that you bring this up, the fact that, you know, when we talk about like point of no return and we really, you know, hash that over this once again, this was a bad batch episode. I don't know why I keep going on, but it was exactly what it kind of, in some cases it kind of exactly what it was. But you know, would Juggernaut also kind of like be declared as sort of an inevitability, right? Or is Thanos saying, was it this? No, that's the Thanos line. I'm inevitable. But when, you know, I kept thinking about that when I was like, you know, watching Hemlock meet and take Omega by himself on the platform, didn't even look like they turned the lights on. That it seemed like no matter what, like he wasn't guarding Omega at all. I know we're going to get into those with some other questions, but it was just like, it did seem in a way, it's sort of like, yeah, it was just, you know, Hemlock is a juggernaut, or like Hemlock's plan is a juggernaut. But in some cases, yeah, I think my first thing would just been like, oh, cool tank. And it's really a cool tank. But yeah, I don't really know if I think there is a second meaning to that or not. I don't know. I maybe watching it, I'll have to watch it again to give it a fairer shake. But yeah, to me, it was just tank. But I do love the fact that there is sort of this, everything's moving forward, whether we want it to or not.
Yeah, I mean, you just said, don't overthink it, but I'm an English person. That's what I do. Not England, the country, of course. That was last week's guest. But English major on patrol here. So I think the Empire is a fantastic answer. And right, because again, a force campaign or movement that crushes everything in its path. Mm-hmm. And I think Anthony just articulated it nicely. I'm just co-signing that. But I also agree, Greg, that it is specifically Hemlock, right? Like Hemlock this season has been a juggernaut, and he was able to take every resource given to him by the Emperor. We heard Tarkin last week objecting and saying, you know, but he is going to proceed. And as we take a step back and think about larger Star Wars history, we know that whatever this project is going to be a juggernaut, and it's going to survive the fall of the Empire and be how Dr. Pershing is pursuing Grogu, it would seem. And then it's all speculative, but it seems like this is the somehow Palpatine returned. So it seems to me that like that's a really good answer. But I want to put one more candidate in there, which is the Bad Batch. I think the Bad Batch themselves are a juggernaut, and they're just going to keep pushing forward no matter what. And all those surprises we all listed at the beginning of the episode, it's like, oh, we're not doing any of that. We're just going to skip over that part. because this episode has a real momentum, and it's just pushing us into the action and forward. And it's like the characters themselves can't stop to think about. So in the final way over reading of it, then I will take us to the climactic moment when two juggernauts collide, right? And what is that but the Empire and the Bad Batch? And the Bad Batch goes flying over the top and continues on. So maybe that's a metaphor for what we'll see in the weeks to come. I think that's what a lot of us are hoping. We'll see. You know, a lot of fun wordplay, I thought.
So as the Rebel base card grounds itself to a halt, please find Greg Cass on Force Ghost Conversation, Coffee with Kenobi, or wherever you get much better Star Wars podcasts than this, because this ain't it. This, you know, I don't. If you're going to give a Pringles can for this podcast, just don't, because it's not going to be. No, but it's like I said, once again, this is so interesting where this episode falls and what it's doing and the feels it's giving. But I would say that, you know, having seen the Juggernaut, you know, in The Mandalorian, right? And first off, I thought, you know, what kind of like a partial question was this the same labor planet that we got?
It's the heist with Mayfield. They ride one of these into the base and get the intel of where the Moff's forces are.
So the question somewhere in there was, I guess, have we seen Erebus before, or is this a new planet? Did you have any insight, Greg, whether or not that name rung a bell?
It is not familiar. I can guarantee that's not the one from Rogue One. I don't know my Mando as good as I should, perhaps, or as well as I should. There's the English major really coming out. As good as I should, as well as I should. So
we're really setting a low bar for this one. This one's really, we'll be skating out of this one with our very lives and whatever few subs are still left after this. But no, I think that's something that I can't wait. And you know, something else, that a great resource, StarWars.com. When you're able to get to it, because a lot of times they'll do stuff behind and they'll give you a little extra color. I'll be tripping on there right after we get done recording to see what else we've gotten wrong in this one. But that was just something. But yes, to see the vehicle again, because I think it's a great vehicle design. I'd love to see like a Lego version or a vintage series one. I think that'd be very cool. So you could play and you can smash two of them together. At any rate, no. All right. But I do have a question for you, and I think a better question, maybe something with a little bit of meat on it, would have to be with Emery and Omega. And I love the line, you know, it's like, you know, for what it's worth, I'm glad you're safe. And Omega says, am I? Which is another great little kind of response. Emery just loves setting people up. But I guess my question is like, does Emery really think she's safe, or that, you know, like that she is not in grave danger? And is Omega in grave danger? She's definitely confined. She's definitely going to be used. But is she in danger the way that Emery thinks? Because we probably have a feeling that in order to kind of, you know, 74 jailbreak, Emery's going to have to crack. But does Emery really think that Omega is safe? I mean, do we think Omega is safe?
Well, to start, I'll say yes, Omega is safe until she's finished serving her purpose, right? Until they've gotten enough blood from her that they have a stockpile that they need to, and then they'll kind of cast her aside. So she's safe until that point, in my opinion. Now, does Emery think that she's safe? I think she kind of has to a certain degree, that she has some control over the matter, right? As the kind of the scientist person that's in charge, she kind of feels like she has some ownership of the work being done to a large degree. So I think that she, for what she can control, which I think is probably a good amount of power on the Tantive space, she's probably number two right now underneath Hemlock. So unless it becomes superseded by a Hemlock choice, nothing, no harm will come on to her at this point. Until, again, the usefulness is over, which Hemlock will say, all right, get rid of her and move on.
Yeah, I think that was the lesson of Identity Crisis, right? Is that I think Emery realized for herself, right? There's the moment where she realizes that she is essentially the same as the children, and that she has her use and is safe as long as that use continues. So I think Emery would just extend that to Omega. There was kind of a new vibe in this episode, in my opinion anyway, between Hemlock and Omega, where Hemlock, you know, should have been really angry at Omega for all the waste and all the stress she has caused, but treats her not as an equal by any means, but almost like a protege, and kind of showing her on this tour and walking her through and, you know, setting her up to be different from the other kids, even at the moment he's essentially locking her up with the other kids and putting her inside the vault. But it felt to me like that also reinforces that Omega is safe, at least for the moment. And I'm still really curious how all this kind of folds into that larger Star Wars history. We talked last week about the Cad Bane episode of Clone Wars, where Palpatine's been stealing Force-sensitive babies for seemingly a long time. Although it's not that long in the timeline. That's like 3 years, I think, in universe time, even though it's like 10 years ago, 15 years ago in our time. So I do wonder long-term, and then again, I think we're expecting within the next 3 episodes some kind of cataclysmic event at Mount Tantus. Maybe not ready to predict who's going to come out on top, but what happens there, and can Emery keep the children at all safe within that? Because I think Anthony said it right, which is if the power is in her hands, she will do her best, but it may not be in her hands for that long. And just a shout out to the really great moment. I believe it's when Omega and Emery first talk, and Emery kind of is left standing there. It's like the shot lingers, like they forgot to shut off the camera, as if that's a thing that could happen in animation. And Emery just gives kind of a deep sigh. That's not somebody who's happy and content with her work and excited to be a part of advancing science. That's somebody who has kind of grave concerns, and I think that'll keep playing out. Greg, anything on your own question? Anything you want to say? Redemption for Emery Carr, or did you write her off?
I do think that she's the key to all this, and I maybe it is good that she's still towing the party line in this episode, and you know, but maybe her, you know, maybe Omega seeing through this, where she's like, nah, you can't BS me, lady. I know we're all in it. And maybe Emery is, you know, kind of getting tired of maybe lying to herself that like, no, it's fine. It's all fine. And hopefully we'll see, you know, cause I do, you know, like with the 3 episodes left, that she's going to crack, and what's it going to take? And, you know, it's interesting that once again, Omega gets put with these kids. But it'll be very curious, because Emery is kind of in charge of the vault. The dynamics of the vault are going to be something we'll be paying a lot of attention to next week and going forward. But that's, the cracks are there. I think it'll pay off. I think we are seeing, you know, it's not going to be one of those where it just instantly kind of twists. We're going to buy it when it happens. All right. Another round, shall we? If we have anything left in the tank here, Anthony.
Let's do it. So actually, this is kind of a great piggyback off of the last 2 questions here. And really, I just want to kind of get your guys' opinions and thoughts on, like, why do you think that Hemlock and the Empire decided to throw Omega into the vault with the kids? Like, I can get the sense of them being like, yeah, it doesn't matter. They're underlings. Keep them all in one place there. We control all of them and all that stuff. But in my head, I'm like, is this really, and adding it to the Juggernaut thing, is this the Juggernaut? Is this Omega with a bunch of Force-sensitive kids? Like, Omega, we've seen how she's done the last 2 seasons here, really being great at strategizing and putting plans together and believing in herself and being able to inspire others to do great work. Is this how they could potentially create a little rebellion and insurrection on Tantus? I mean, have they just made their own demise here in some way by thinking, underestimating children? I mean, definitely a thing that happens time and time again in Star Wars is underestimating people, put in dire straits. So, like, I just want to get your guys' thoughts. Like, why do you think that they did this? And could it have long ramifications, as we kind of, I think, hinted at a little bit here?
And I want to add on, put a buttress on that question of like, well, why didn't they before then? Right.
Yeah,
because she was here. Some kids were there before. It's a really good
question.
Put her
back in her old cell. Call it a day.
Yeah. Yeah. Give her doll back. Yeah. Well, what came to mind first is the practical reason of she did escape before, which we shouldn't forget. So there seems to be a logical reason to put her under greater scrutiny and security. So maybe the vault is just the answer to that. I mean, we've seen I mean, it's shocking how much security there is around that. We seem to have the Phantom Menace kind of ray shielding gates on the way in, and then just a huge number of Republic commandos just standing around. So there's probably that, you know, you could make that argument. But I'm very much intrigued by the second part of your question, which is, could this be a grave mistake on their part? I don't want to take one of my questions away. So I will hedge this to say, I do think there's a lot of potential in putting Omega with these kids. If we've learned anything about Omega over these three seasons, it's she can form attachments in a really positive way. I don't mean that in the prequel Jedi sense. And those attachments matter, right? She can befriend Batcher, and Batcher can become a key to success in a lot of things. So I think it is a mistake, and kind of narrative structure. You know, when the youngling tried to escape in Identity Crisis, I think that was about seeing the cruelty so that Emery could learn that lesson. But hey, we also got a very clear view about what it takes to get out of there and what are the steps. And if this were a heist movie starring Bruce Willis or not, it could...
Just saying.
That's how you build that story, right? You show the steps it takes to get into the vault or out of the vault, and then you have to have your character check those boxes in the next act of the film. It's a little different on TV, but it would make sense that they kind of laid that down. So why? I'm not positive, but is this a bad choice? I am positive. I think you're right that this will be a terrible underestimation of Omega.
I'll tap
Greg, are the kids all right?
I'm just saying that decision is as short-sighted as the list of questions that I walked into this episode with, which is dwindling. This is why I'm hating going last. And by the way, Bruce Willis, one of the best cat burglars that he gets billed as. He's one of the best, and that's catch the hawk. Catch the excitement. That's all I'm going to say. But yeah, I was surprised. You're like... And I'm sitting there as he's kind of doing the exposition dump, and I'm going, why would you even tell her, you know, about anything? I don't think, I mean, other than it helps us, and I was very happy, because I think that throughout this series, we've been trying to figure out, like, how are they going to do it? And they've been kind of giving us little bit by little bit. And I think this was even a better thing, because we're all like, okay, so how is it, you know, like, all right, hey, he's basically saying we failed. We haven't been able to replicate M counts, and you know, the sample we took, you know, mixes it and it doesn't denigrate. But it was kind of surprising that, yeah, I mean, clearly this gal got off your planet. So why you didn't even bother to, you know, A just kind of shows the chutzpah. But it's going to come back to really bite them, because I'm like, you know, the gal turned one of the hounds, you know, it's like, so, and then, you know, if Hemlock hasn't seen it in Emery, you know, cause he kind of keeps kind of prodding her a little bit, but he still clearly hasn't, you know, at any rate. So I think that this will definitely be part of the downfall, because, you know, we kept thinking before, it's like, would Omega pick up anything from a Jedi, any Jedi training? And I'm curious whether or not, is Gunji going to be the hero of all this by saying, you know, like, hey, maybe she doesn't know exactly how to train them, but maybe she can turn their emotions, or at least kind of go, hey, if you're able to do something, you know, let that flag fly freely, folks. And, you know, those ray shields ain't going to take down themselves. So, but yeah, I'm on board with this. This is, if anything, we've got to kind of show your Rampart kind of shows us that there is a way for the Batch to get to Tannis, and B, Omega kind of getting mixed in with the rest and not being separated, does show that she's going to continue to work on anybody who's going to listen. And something bad's going to really happen. It's almost like Domino from Deadpool. No, that's another movie. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Did you know Andy McDowell was in Hudson Hawk? Anyway.
I forgot this was a Hudson Hawk podcast that I signed up for. Speaking of Andy McDowell, no, I don't have anything. But so I guess, so this is the question I was hemming and hawing about, and maybe this is just my ignorance slash lack of science knowledge, but I'm really confused, and I need, I mean, Greg, you promised this when you introduced Anthony, that he was ready to talk M counts. So I am confused whether this episode maybe confirmed that Omega does not have the Force, right? So the explanation we got, this I'll tell you how I heard it and then correct me, but how I heard this is that they are looking for a way to essentially move midichlorians, and it sounded like Omega's blood can transport midichlorians, but it didn't sound like it's a Force ability, that you needed the Force sensitive with the Omega blood. Does that mean, I mean, is that our answer? Or, and this is what I was hemming and hawing about, could it be that you throw Omega in with these Force sensitive children and she really picks up some Force abilities from them? Is that part of this? So what I just started this episode saying the debates from 1999 don't matter anymore. But Greg, Anthony, help me understand midichlorians or where they stand after this episode.
Well, I think your interpretation of what Hemlock said is entirely correct. Like, she is just the the A to B point. You need to have some highway in between there, and Omega's blood is the thing that gets them to that point. Again, this is the I think every podcast is debating this. Is Omega Force sensitive? Is she not? Does she have enough M count? Does it matter the M count? Sabine doesn't have an M count that high, and she's somehow able to do it. And then you have Anakin over here, who can do just about anything because he has the highest M count ever. At this point, I'm just like, does it matter? I think I'm M count fatigued. Once they finally said the word midichlorian, I'm like, finally, I'm set. I'm good to go, guys. You said the word. And then now it's just like, all right, at the end of the day, she's the bind. Okay, all right, that's it. If she has the Force, great. She'll pick up on it, perhaps. I think that's a great suggestion that maybe she somehow learns how to lift a fork or something like that while she's eating lunch, or maybe a pear or two or something like that, whatever they're fed.
A broom, right? A broom. She'll, yeah. She'll do the broom boy.
Yes, exactly. Broom. yeah, I think that's where my brain goes at this point, is that maybe, I don't think she does. I'm going to definitively say she doesn't at this point. She doesn't have the M count threshold by which the Jedi used to say you'd be taken as a kid. To be, trained in the ways of the Force. That's where I'm going at right now on record.
Nice.
I think I've been going back and forth on this, but I do think that, you know, I think since the series began, it's showed that she does have, you know, some innate abilities. And, you know, was some of that just like with the Batch, in that they had mutations that were favorable, that she could mimic or pick up things, and she was a good shot. She's empathetic towards animals. I would say that she has some, although I don't think she understands what she has. I think she just does it. But the way I was kind of thinking as far as like how she'll be used, it's like, okay, if they're cloning someone who has a high midichlorian count, but that their midichlorians fade. So maybe somehow the blood that she donates, through an infusion or whatnot, stabilizes that existing blood count within the person. And maybe they need, over time, maybe she becomes a little blood bank. Mm. Of course, we saw, by the time we get old Papa Palps in Rise of Skywalker, he's looking like something worked, but something really didn't work. But maybe that's how far they got, or maybe that was their intent, was at least to kind of get it over there, and maybe it would mix in and they would, I don't know, at a cellular level. Boy, we're trying to talk science and not working. my sister is the microbiologist in the family. She should have really taken the reins on this podcast. But I do think that maybe something that she's able to infuse stabilizes the person who they're trying to replicate, Palps. But maybe they try it with, maybe they try it with the Force sensitive kids beforehand, just to kind of see if it works, and if we're playing a long game here. But as far as the Force, you know, I'm starting to kind of buy into the fact that she has something. I didn't catch, you know, a lot of podcasts listened to last week made a lot over Omega, like when she was meditating at the end, when she was being carried off by the operative and all of a sudden her eyes kind of open up, that there was something there. And I didn't even catch any of that. Mm. But I'm starting to wonder, it's like, does she have something that she can add to them? And just by talking to them, maybe they start to, you know, as the kids are kind of putting together these little puzzles, maybe there's a puzzle that they figure out going, hey, I can do this. Cause we, you know, Jax is an older one in there and maybe he has something that he hasn't really shared yet, but I'll be curious if in the conversations that we have, or they have next week, maybe someone's going to teach something how to, you know, like maybe it's not the proper Jedi way, maybe it's not the Hu Yang way, but maybe there's a way that these kids are going to really unlock something or cause major havoc. It's possible. But that's my best answer there.
I just want to make you two fight more. No, I'm going to say it like it's D&D. I think Omega has a really high charisma, right? And is learning as a kid about that age tends to, like when they are a very charismatic presence, like the power that that wields. And so some of what we've read as potential Force powers of like bonding with people and animals and so on is just kind of a real strong innate ability to read people and connect with people. I do think that part of who Omega is will play a role with these children, right? And I think that that's going to matter in the long run, whether it saves them as they all run off or leads to an insurrection that actually, I mean, wouldn't it be great if the whole Bad Batch storms Mount Tantus with every clone and bounty hunter we ever heard of on this show, and they arrive and Omega's waiting out front with bags packed like after soccer practice or something. So but I think I am taking today's episode as you don't have, well, and I really like how Anthony phrased it. You don't have the count that the Jedi would recruit you. Mm-hmm. And I had totally forgotten that Ahsoka really clearly established this kind of old rule. And I think this came from George Lucas originally. That's like midichlorians are the steroids, right? Mm-hmm. Like we all could play baseball, but if we had the steroids, we could play really good baseball. That's right. See certain seasons of this sport we all love. And so that means that, yeah, there's something inside of Omega, and she could still, through careful training and meditation and so on, get somewhere. But I think it is starting to feel more important to me that we end this show without a Jedi, because these are the dark times, and in dark times, people have to rely on themselves, not the heroes, to come get them. So. And that to me seems like I don't want to be bleak, but that seems like a good message for the modern world, right? We're in dark times in a lot of ways. So it seems like a good time to have that message out there.
I'm going to totally crib one of Kyle Scully's questions he put in, because his list was kind of better than mine, which is almost completely exhausted. But I want to piggyback kind of off that a little bit. Do you think that unintentionally, in that last scene from the previous episode, do you think Omega reached out to somebody or was trying to reach out to somebody that may be involved in what's to come, to help save the day? Maybe Echo, maybe Rex, or maybe Gunji or something like that. But do you think that Omega reached out unintentionally even?
I mean, that'd be cool if she did. That'd be real cool if you ask me. Gunji, maybe. Yeah, who knows? Sky could be the limit at that point. Who's not on our bingo cards that we're not thinking
of? I was going to say Rampart kind of came out of nowhere. I am kind of curious if that was planted in there to maybe someone in the three episodes that we have to come. Because we would kind of be expecting, you know, Echo and Rex to kind of show up, because maybe we are going to have some kind of storming, or at least some kind of group effort. But did someone else pick up on the message as well?
Yeah. Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines harbinger as a person
I knew I was gonna get it for that one.
Announces or say. So I didn't put a lot on that moment, as is clear from our episode where we didn't talk about that moment at our all. But it seems to me the most likely candidate is Assange, because Omega was in that headspace when she, you know, was around Assange. Assange was pushing her to learn. And I do still have questions about that episode title and why she was called Harbinger, because that is usually a sign of something to come. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think there is a version of this show that wraps up with a high body count. Sorry, everybody. and maybe Omega gets away to start a life with Assange or with someone else. But again, as you tick off your list of characters we've encountered who could be coming back around to save, I think Assange needs to be in the mix, because we still, you know, don't really know what she's up to with potentially with Quinlan, who we also know is out there. That's Quinlan. And anybody who confused which Jedi that was would be a fool, and maybe require their dear podcast friend to edit out like 20 minutes of our episode. But Quinlan Voss, who had a strong connection, and we know from Kenobi survived the purge and took the path. So that seems like a moment or a candidate. I also just go back to Last Jedi, and Rey sits on that rock and she just feels the Force, and that's the big moment, right? You know, my favorite part of that scene is when Luke says to her, "And inside of you," and Daisy smiles this incredible little smile and says, "That same Force." And so I think it could be that, you know, whether through skill, now I'm making the case that she is Force sensitive, but whether that's, you know, through skill or just, you know, a brief flash of it, maybe she did touch on something bigger and sensed that this is part of how the Force is at work right now, and she doesn't have to be worried. I mean, it can't be Luke, right? Luke's like an infant, yeah. So we're not going to get a Mando season 2 finale here at Mount Tantus.
Those 1.5-star ratings aren't going to write themselves, folks. So that's iTunes and Spotify, and I will take it all in stride. One star.
Too many definitions.
Merriam-Webster defines Quinlan Voss.
Defines bad podcasting as.
I swear, Anthony, we're going to bring you back on a really good episode. I'll tell you what,
this has been very informative. I love it.
Well, I haven't been missing anything by listening to, anyway, episodes 1 through 74 of The Breakfast Back. But I, you know, it's interesting. Now, I would say, you know, in my weak defense that, you know, as any of these shows go on, you know, it becomes less of speculation what's going to happen. And, you know, towards the end, it does get a little tricky, because in the beginning you have tons of questions, and sometimes on good episodes, whether they fall, it's like they do kind of spurn some really great conversation, really questions about, you know, and I think that, you know, we've made it nearly three complete seasons in, and still don't really have a good take on where Omega's going to be. And it will be interesting to see, are we going to get that resolution, as Greg was saying? Are we going to really know where she's at in all this? We kind of know, you know, Rex is the only one we, you know, kind of know what's going to happen down the line, but it does seem that Omega is still, you know, flip a coin as far as, is she going to show up in live action? Is she going to go off with Assage? Is she going to go off, you know, or the Bad Batch going to go back to Babu now that no one really thinks they're going back there, you know? So it is kind of interesting that, yeah, with three episodes left, like an hour and a half, if that, not even that.
Probably closer to an hour.
Probably a little less, yeah.
That, are we ever going to really know? And what are we going to be left with? And Lord knows the questions we're going to have for the last episode of this, of the Bad Batch. But at any rate, all right. Does anyone have any other questions, by the way?
I've got a few more.
All right, let's do it.
I'll say to your point there too, Greg, I would love for in the last episode for Ventress to come in at the last hour to save the day and then to just freeze frame, break the fourth wall, look directly at the camera and be like, to those of you wondering how I survived Dark Disciple.
Catch me in my new show.
I would love that exposition. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't matter how the show ends. There's still going to be some questions afterwards, just in general, just based off of what went in this season.
She's going to get her own tales of, is that that's what's going to happen. And everybody's going to be like, yep.
I almost could have guaranteed it. And then Tales of the Empire came out as the title. And then, well, all right. Something else will happen. So that's a fun little tidbit there. But I did have a question just about Tantus itself and the fact that Rampart is like, well, it's kind of hidden. The Empire kind of destroyed the coordinates, or how does that... I'm just trying to wrap my brain around how that whole thing worked. Like, did they get rid of the coordinates? Is it just unfindable? Do they just call a place Tantus when it's really like Stujon or something like that? Like, is this another Kamino example? Did they just go into the Holo Records and delete stuff? Where do you guys think about that?
Gravity shadow remains, but the plant. No, I.
We're gonna lose our half star after this, man.
I think it, we got a little taste of the fact that, like, Cad Bane seems to be supplying them with their Jedi children and presumably other A1 class bounty hunters, and he did a transfer on a very different planet. So I think it's that they have kept this extremely secret. And I'm going to dip a little into Legends, which you can never guarantee comes straight through. But in the Thrawn books, Tantus was not just a scientific outpost. It did have what in Legends were called Sparty cloning cylinders, which is how cloning happened in Legends before the prequels arrived. But it was much more of like the last stand for the Empire. So it had weapons storehouses and it had material to kind of rebuild the army. And we haven't gotten a sense if that's what's there yet. Because this is Palpatine, I think of Hitler just to really go for it. In World War II, there were these secret caverns that Hitler stole the kind of riches of Europe, the art, the, you know, this is not a great movie, but an okay movie for the history it pulls out. It's Monuments Men by George Clooney. And they kind of show this that, you know, they tackled, just stole huge amounts of really valuable property from around Europe and had these kind of secret enclaves and warehouses. And that to me is what the original Mount Tantus was like in Legends, it's a place to hold up and to wait. We kind of know from current canon that there's somewhere out in the outer unknown regions that Sloane and other members of the Empire retreat to after Operation Cinder and somehow begin to start the First Order. And that seems to be tied into the Shadow Council, which now has been brought into Mando. So I think all of that makes me think Tantus is probably out there. I don't know if it's in the unknown regions, but it's off the beaten track. You would think in a galaxy this big, you could hide a planet pretty easily and just not tell people where it is. This is just such a stupid point, but like, I grew up in New Hampshire, so we have Mount Washington. And like, if you told a space alien about Mount Washington, they wouldn't know where it is. They could maybe identify Earth or third planet from the sun or what have you. But I do think there's probably something there. This could be technically a planet we know, right? I mean, maybe it's just the backside of Coruscant. No, I don't think it's that. But
it's the other side.
Yeah. Or a moon of a well-known planet, but you just keep the records and you only use, I guess we know from Rogue One, they like to use these code names, right? And this is Project Necromancer and so on. So by calling it Mount Tantus, you are hiding its location so that even in records, which we've now, gotten some access to, you don't get the planet location. So that's That's my best guess. My money would be on this is a totally new, different planet. And maybe, you know, in typical Star Wars fashion, it'll just be a mountain planet. And this just happens to be Mount Tantus on it.
Or maybe it's just one of those things, you know, when Hemlock, you know, answers his email or whoever's like driving the ship, they get a one-time code. You know, this is a one-time, you know, navigational code. And when it's done, it's done. And maybe they scramble. I don't think it would be that hard to say, like, you know, once you have completed a trip there or back, part of the nav computer gets scrambled or something where, you know, whatever it was, the trace, however you got there was, you know, erased or something like that. I'm sure they could come up with something along those lines. But yeah, it is kind of interesting when you talk about we keep finding these planets that no one knows where they are, but yet it seems to be pretty easy to get to and from, except in this case. So I would say in some cases, yeah, I agree with Greg that it's probably a moon or something that is, you know, kind of off the beaten path, and then a combination of encryption. You know, we know the pads that Omega had gotten didn't have anything on it. I'd be kind of curious if Echo ever really did, you know, decrypt some of that, but it just seems that whatever it is, if you have the information or you get there, it's a one-time thing, and then you've got to buy a new ticket. Just like the Paris Metro or something like that. One way.
One way.
One way and you get it. At any rate. Good question, though. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think I agree with Greg that it's just a new planet. They'll just call it Tantus. I do love the theories, though, of like, yeah, it could just be a project term just so, and it's used internally. It's internal jargon. No one knows else what it means. I like the idea also of a one-way ticket with perhaps you get, you know, as we keep reading into the High Republic, we learn about how important the paths are to actually getting places. And if every time someone gets there, it's through via a different path, so it's not really memorable for anybody or through a unique trade route to get there, then perhaps that's also something I'm vaguely remembering. Also, I think I may be entirely wrong and off the beaten path here, but I think in Jedi Survivor, the video game, that it kind of ends with them going off to a whole different unexplored planet where they can be safe from the Empire. So maybe that's also another avenue they could go with. But again, to have the exposition for how to do all that in this show, I don't foresee that happening. And then just they'll somehow find the coordinates via Tantus's Rampart's buddy that he's going to call up and they'll figure it out somehow. But I'm just intrigued again, like, oh, did they lose another planet? First Kamino, now this is a trend.
Does this mean I get to kill Cal Kestis on yet another new planet? That's great.
Well, and invoking that reminded me of Ilum, right? That we have Ilum and then Jedi Fallen Order confirmed that really is what became Starkiller Base eventually. Yeah. And it could be something like that, a planet that was inhabited but emptied out. We know Geonosis, they wanted to hide the Death Star, so they just wiped out the whole species. So it could be something like that. Behind my laptop, I spend all our recording sessions listening very carefully to what Greg's saying, but also looking at the map of the Star Wars galaxy that they created for Star Wars Timelines, which I think there's now an edition of that book that was maybe at Costco where you can get the map. But the map is very cool. If you didn't get one at Celebration, it's worth checking one out. But what's always amazing to me as I daydream and look at this map is like, there are easily 200 planets named on this, and I know so few of them. And look, I mean, I've proven over time, I take this stuff way too seriously and care way too much about it. And to have, you know, a whole like hyperspace trade route and every planet along it I've never heard of, it's kind of shocking to me. It's actually harder to find the planets I do recognize on that map than I don't. So it's just a reminder that it's a big galaxy, and I think they'll only keep expanding it instead of returning to these places. My last question on my list is super lame, but I just want to note, like, can you believe how far Lucasfilm Animation has come? You know, this action sequence was just crazy. And where I go to, I was in the theater that was very empty at midnight on, I think it was August 15th, 2008, for the Clone Wars movie. And immediately the reaction was, this is not up to the level of like a Pixar movie or something like that. And those early seasons of the Clone Wars are very empty, right? There's like whoever the characters are right in the foreground and nothing going on behind them because they hadn't built it out. But I thought this action sequence was stunning. So I've already just kind of answered my own question, but like it's really incredible how far they've come. And I assume we're not seeing the end of Lucasfilm animation with the end of Bad Batch and Tales of the Empire. So I am excited to see them continue to grow because this is really stunning, this episode.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, they keep posting open positions on Twitter and LinkedIn. Yeah. So they must keep something cooking over there in order to keep hiring people for upcoming projects. I second that entirely. This entire season has been quite a joy and delight. Not just the animation itself, but I think they've really gotten really inventive with how they've been lighting certain scenes and the direction of where the camera is actually moving and how they animate the stuff. It's really just been top tier, if you ask me, and how they've actually been presenting the series and all these just character updates from the Clone Wars. Like, it's just been really nice to see just the animation itself just improve over years. And I did get a lot of great like Raiders of the Lost Ark vibes in terms of like that kind of cliff sequence that they were doing in this episode. So just wanted to always throw that in there. Anytime I can throw a Raiders reference into stuff, I'm like, yes, there it is. I'm Leo pointing at the screen.
And specifically Last Crusade too, when the guy gets crunched. Yeah. But yes, I completely agree. We gotta shout out Indiana Jones.
I also saw Clone Wars in the theater, and I remember taking my son to it. And you know, you're right, those early episodes are pretty, aren't the best. It's interesting that, we've said, throughout this series that I love every time we've gone to Paboo because it's just absolutely gorgeous. I think the fight sequence between the Batch and Asajj Ventress was amazing. I have to agree, Greg, I loved the Juggernaut action part of it because I thought it was done really well. And in seeing Tales of the Jedi and Tales of the Empire, you see how we can kind of get creative with, hey, we still have all this infrastructure in place. Let's keep this going. We don't necessarily have to come with maybe up with a fluid series. We can do these in spurts. It doesn't take, we fill in a lot of exposition. It doesn't take a lot of coin. And, and D Bradley Baker is running around there somewhere with all these voices, right? We've had, Shelby Young. We've had, Matt Lanter. We've had a lot of recurring voices. Heck, we had Angelica Houston on an episode. So they're not afraid to like throw money around and keep those people on the payroll. The only thing that I would counter that is the Clone Wars animation style a victim of its own success? Because we went from Clone Wars to Rebels, which was kind of that started with a cheaper version, but I was, kind of bought into it. And then we went to Resistance, which, much like Hudson Hawk, I like, but a lot of people did. Bringing it back to the Hawk. But I'm also wondering, it's like, do we now think that they may not, especially with sort of the penny pinching of, Igor and company, do we not think that they will maybe try to do something like, okay, you have Visions, which are, like you have this, so you can play around there. But as far as like a long form series, do you think that they would instinctively fall back on Clone War style animation, or will they try to break new ground elsewhere? What do you see them continuing to do? They have all this mechanism in place, but are they stuck doing Clone Wars style animation for good or bad? I knew there was a question somewhere. If you lasted an hour 20,
that's right.
I was going to get a good question. And I tell you, for the five of you who are still listening, and that's way too high for this. I came through at the end, folks.
I'm going to say they're probably going to, if I'm a betting person, I'm going to say that they're probably going to, if they do another animated series, long form, they're going to touch an era outside of this time frame, right? We've already seen them kind of dabble with the High Republic with Young Jedi Adventures, and that's an entirely different animation style. So every time that we've seen them dip into a new era, they are doing a completely different view and look on things. So I gotta imagine that with like The Acolyte coming out and just, the James Mangold film and the New Republic film with Daisy Ridley that's going to come out sometime, that they're going to try and continue to expand the foundation of the Star Wars timeline and probably put a new series wherever they can, where they can just have fresh era to tell whatever story they want to without trying to fit into a whole different array of other things that are going on. That, you know, that's probably where I'd go with it, but you know, they made, I don't think it'd be worse. Let's just say, let me just answer that question right there. If it's better or worse, I wouldn't complain either. If they just were like, all right, now it's the Rex and Echo series where immediate sequel follow-up, it takes place minutes after they escape Tantus, after wherever the season ends, if that's where it ends, right? It just takes place immediately afterwards. I would be there midnight or 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. or hopefully they go back to 9 p.m. releases for this stuff.
Thank geez.
You know, I'll be there front and center for it whenever that comes out. So, you know, I won't complain. I don't think it's a hindrance to them, but I think creatively they'll probably want to at some point move to another era. And if I can, perhaps on the indie side, I'd love to see more Indiana Jones animation in the future. I think it's ripe for that.
I'm so glad you saved this discussion by mentioning Young Jedi Adventures, because my kids are the only ones still listening, and they were about to riot that Greg left them off the list. My 4-year-old daughter in particular, within the last 2 weeks or so, has fallen head over heels again for Young Jedi Adventures. She wants a nub stuffy, and
hey, it's great. Like,
wants to do it. Yeah. And it you know, I think a lot of fans were like, this is going to be incredible. And then they were like, oh, this is just a kid show. And it's like, yeah, but Star Wars
what'd
is big
expect?
Enough that we can have that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hudson Hawk, what did you expect?
Come on. That is actually what my 4-year-old daughter cited. She's like, come on, catch the hawk. But you know, and Young Jedi Adventures fits very much in, if you are a parent, you consume way too much of shows of exactly that quality. So there's the Spider-Man one that features Miles, Gwen, and Peter Parker as kind of young kids. Spidey and Friends. And that both of those kind of spun off of PJ Masks, which is a kind of original property, but it was almost like Disney said, wait a minute, let's just paint it Marvel. Let's paint it Star Wars, and we'll have three hits instead of one. And so I think there is always going to be like a lower tier show available that, you know, my kids are not critiquing the animation. They are just like, I love Nubs. I love Kai. I love Liss and want to see those adventures. And I think that's great. And, you know, Marvel has Spidey and Friends. I am not watching X-Men 97, but clearly that is like micro-targeted to a specific generation that loved that original show. And the anime, there it is. And that animation style is great. And it is an homage to what it was, but it also is cheap, I imagine, compared to a lot of other styles. I'm not an expert on animation, but that's a guess, or cheaper than heavily rendered 3D animation. But I do think sometimes Star Wars fans fall in a trap where they think, like, when they wanted the Clone Wars to come back, they thought, like, Dave just had to go turn on a computer again and it was all sitting there ready to go. And, like, you know, the advancements that are made in animation means, like, everything's new. So if there is another version of Clone Wars animation in the next show, it'll be a new iteration of it, which means way more than what we on the surface can kind of say. And really the proof is, go back and watch those first season episodes of Clone Wars, and the storytelling is still great, but you'll be struck by how poor the animation is compared to where we're at now. And even Rebels, I think, is already starting to look a little dated in those early seasons. But that's great. And, you know, I'm completely in line with Anthony. I'll be up at 2 a.m. and I won't be happy about it, but I'll be there ready to go with with whatever they put out. And I do love the YouTube commenter class of Star Wars that pretends they're going to bail at some point. And it's like, whatever it is, they'll be there and they'll complain because that's how they get their clicks. But, you know, we love it and it continues to deliver. So I'll be happy to see it. I agree. Resistance is better than people give it credit for. And I think it was good that they tried their own different distinctive style. And, you know, it looked good for what it was. It just wasn't Clone Wars. And so people got turned off by it. Yeah. But, you know, I think, you know, Marvel What If has its own distinct style. Oh, and Indiana Jones co-signed, but also, like, I agree. Like, let's get way out of the timeline. But also, I would totally take a right after Return of the Jedi. Let's not recast these actors. Let's just, you know, do animated Han, Luke, and Leia and see what those years held, I'd be there in a heartbeat. So,
boy, isn't it surprising they haven't tried that? Mm-hmm. Or if you did like, because if you did like a manga version of that, which I've seen, stills over things like that. But if you got those stories and you can revoice it, because then obviously you have Shelby Young that does, Princess mm-hmm. Leia, who did her in Rebels. You could revoice all of them and do those adventures. I mean, they came up with, if we remember the Marvel comic, when Marvel got Star Wars back in 2015 and whatnot, and they did that mm-hmm. whole line of adventures that was, that's kind of canon. You've got to, you can do that and rehash those stories to Kingdom Come at any rate.
Well, and let's not forget the relationships they built through Visions. Mm-hmm, on mm-hmm. my movie podcast, I was completely when a car hits you from the side swiped. So I just
Merriam-Webster
totally
defends describes side swiped as.
I think that'd be the Urban Dictionary at this point.
Yeah, Urban Dictionary.
I did not know we did an episode on my movie podcast of most anticipated films of the year, and two of my co-hosts were well aware that there's an animated Lord of the Rings movie coming out.
Wait,
I had not heard about this. It's yep. War of the Rohirrim, and it's by one of the studios that did Visions. They've mm-hmm. done like a stylized, and I was like, I had not heard a peep about this movie. I'm like, you're kidding
pretty
me.
Quiet,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. So I think especially if that does the business it's seemingly kind of percolating towards, then that might be a chance for them to use some of these studios and say, I don't think it will be make Toby won the series, make, the Wanderer of the series, but it'll be like, we love what you did. You did cool experimental things. Let's take that style and do something. And I think there's a hunger for it. Animation writ large is more popular than I think it's ever been. Mm-hmm. Anime is more mainstream than it mm-hmm. seems like it's ever been. And all that is great. And Star Wars should take advantage.
Well, speaking of your movie podcast and the Long Take podcast, we are getting dangerously close to encroaching on the length of time that one of those does. But I am kind of curious. I know Anthony. Any more questions on that list? And thank you so much for joining us once again. Before we get to our Pringles cans rating, anything else that we didn't get to on your list?
Yeah, one quick one, and then probably one a bit more of a discussion one. So I guess my question for the just in general is like, why isn't Hemlock more hands on with this project here? Because if it's so important, like the Empire, the Emperor is literally breathing on your neck here, and then as soon as he hands off Omega, he's like, all right, see to it, collect her blood, and I'll be back later. Like, just do it yourself, man. Be there, at least supervise the room. You can just hang out in there. What do you need to do that you can't be in that room right then and there for the most
Thank
important
you.
Thing
Interesting.
in your job description, right? Like, see this project through. Otherwise, you're going to have some major consequences afterwards. And we may see those consequences in this season. But that's just my initial thought. Like, what are you doing, man? Why are you walking away?
Maybe he's playing Jedi Fallen Order and he can't get past a couple levels. So he's like, you let me know and I'll be over here playing Jedi Fallen Order. But you're right. That's something that was kind of bugging me. Like, it's very, this is a very important test. Let me know how it goes. Bye. What do you think, Dr. Kess?
I don't have a good answer, but I,
that hasn't stopped this show before.
No. What comes to mind, I think I view Hemlock very much like the way Orson Krennic is portrayed primarily in, Catalyst, the book that is the prequel to the kind of precipitating events to Rogue One. Mm-hmm. And in that book, it becomes very clear that he, wants to advance through the ranks. The Krennic we see is the Krennic in the book, but doesn't actually have the science skills. And I think I've thought of Hemlock that way, that, Nala Se and now Emery are the Galen Erso, who has the vision, who has the intelligence and the knowledge. But I don't want to insult Anthony because he's a project manager. But Krennic is
taken.
Trying to push that along and take advantage of the talent and harness the talents the right way. So I think I see Hemlock as kind of exploiting some of these scientists in that same way. Now that must mean there are other experiments going on, but it does seem a little silly that he'd still walk away from the key moment of his biggest project.
So we stand here amidst my achievement, not yours. Come on now.
Is Hemlock really a fraud? That is a great point.
That's valid.
Great question.
Yeah.
That, yeah, maybe he doesn't. Maybe that's why he's wearing a glove on one hand.
He failed.
You know, maybe in chem class he did something that got him an F. And now he lets him out. Yeah, that would be fascinating. That he's able to explain it. What was the blood? Oh, my buddy Paul's gonna scream now. Who was the gal in California that ran that company, right? That was supposed to do all the blood tests, but she was more bluster.
Amanda Seyfried. No, that's the actress who played her in the movie. I don't remember the actual person's name.
I'm going to hear about this tomorrow. But no, it could would be very interesting. And how maybe he gets taken down as well. Not bad.
What's the real one?
And then the real one, this is more of like the thought process, the behind the scenes work of how they actually put the episode together and some of the choices that they made. So, and kind of, I guess, similar to what they did earlier in this series when we saw Crosshair meet the Bad Batch again, right? Omega and him escaped, and then they look at each other, and that's how the episode ends, right? Hunter and Wrecker see Crosshair, and then that's where the episode ends. And then the next episode starts, and they're on the ship talking with each other, right? And I think a lot of us wanted to just immediately pick up the episode right then and there and see that initial conversation, which they decided not to show on screen. And they did something similar, in my opinion, in this episode, where I would have loved to have seen the conversation of Crosshair saying, like, explaining the thought process with, like, how Omega tried to escape and I tried shooting the a tracker onto the ship that we could find her and all that stuff, but it didn't work. And, like, I just wanted to see that, like, altercation and interaction explaining the whole theory and reasoning and what happened and all that stuff. And that might have led to some good drama, in my opinion. But I'm a little disappointed that they didn't actually show that. And I just want to get your guys' thoughts on if you had maybe had hoped to have seen that conversation, or maybe it played out the way exactly you hoped it would.
Last week, our guest, Frank Mulder, made me very worried for Crosshair because he pointed out that, you know, nobody saw his versions of events. And I think you're right. There could have been a really big drama moment, a plot beat about that and what actually happened and they don't trust him. We also talked a little last week about whether or not it was his, Jen has been using the sports term for it, even though I don't understand the yips, right? If it's Crosshair's yips, if that's what really made him miss, because it seemed to kind of imply that that was true. And I thought the little hint we got this week kind of confirmed that, right? Because they look at his shaking hand when they're recounting that the tracker missed. So I thought it was confirmation that it was that, but still, again, you're right. If I'm writing this show, that seems like the meal, right? Like, not just the little appetizer for what will be there. So I was definitely surprised. And I guess if I'm trying to understand why they did it, I think they really wanted to get all action for this episode. And why they wanted to do that is, to me, a interesting question. It's not like last week was like all talking. I guess you could say that maybe of the first of last week's two episodes, that I think some people on the internet have said that's why they put out the two, right? Because the Dr. Carr episode was a little slow and a little, you know, kind of still, whereas you know, wanted some more action in that second episode. But it makes me really wonder what's to come, because it seems like this could be all action all the way to the end, but if they really wanted to just make this a big, you know, kind of classic Bad Batch adventure, it makes me think we might be in for some kind of slow simmers to come. And so that's why you might skip the slow simmer in this episode. But, you know, it's so hard for me to really think of the audience they're targeting, because I hate when people are just like, it's a kid's show, because I don't think it's a kid's show. They're not targeting kids. But at the same time, you know, a choice like this is like, well, they kind of skip the adult drama and stick to the kind of Saturday morning cartoon angle. So, That's my long-winded non-answer, which is what we academics are supposed to do. Greg, see if you can dodge the question.
Well, kind of, I mean, I guess at the risk of repeating like some of the earlier comments about it, I think that the main beats I think we got as far as we figured it was going to need to be a quick resolution between, and then we did want to see what was going to happen on Tantus with Omega. And I think the Rampart piece was definitely a surprise. And I do think that they put a lot of meat behind that. I do think that given the events of the last two, it was not much of a stretch to think that we would see more of that conversation that you just talked about, Anthony, about, mm-hmm. you know, how, you know, like it could have basically been, you know, the Empire, we're trying to get out of here. We're trying to regroup. We're trying to convince Fee, who really went along with this. Well, okay. And I kind of wondered, like, is Wanda Sykes, you know, like, there wasn't a whole lot of her in it. I mean, speaking, I'm like, are they paying her by the word? Because I'm like, man, you really could have leaned into a couple of things. But it did seem that, you know, much like the Hawk, a lot of things happened very quickly. And we got on board with it to get to the Juggernaut part. And then at the end, it was a little bit of, you know, we kind of got a little bit of, like, you know, like, did at any point anyone feel that any of the Batch were in danger as they were trying to escape the Juggernaut? I didn't, especially after you nearly killed them. So I'm like, I don't know what was the point of trying to put them in that kind of jeopardy or going through all that to put them in that position when you knew that we weren't necessarily going to buy it because they nearly got killed just last episode. So I think they could have leaned in. But then again, you know, like I said, there's the, well, it's not for kids, but I'm like, you know, like, we were ready. I think you had really primed us ready for this, and that maybe an episode like this could have happened early on, and then we could have gotten, you know, like, we still got the exposition, but I think we also could have really cranked up the tension between Omega and Hemlock, right? Hemlock leaves every time it starts getting really interesting, mm-hmm. and you could have like really made us at the end going, oh, shit, something's going to really happen, and we better, like, I can't wait. But like I said, we got exactly, and going back to, you know, my earlier comments, we kind of got an episode of the Bad Batch, and I'm very happy we got it. I'm surprised they did what they did, and I think in some cases, I think they missed a little bit of an opportunity, if I'm going to be that critical about it. I think they missed an opportunity to really crank it up, especially given how many episodes are left. If it was the end of a season, and we were going to have a season or a series season four of this, okay, I get that, completely makes sense, mm-hmm. but we are nearing the end, and I don't think it's unrealistic for us to go, hey, it's starting to get really good, let's keep going, let's keep this, instead of like basically like a show palate cleanser, like, okay, mm-hmm. we had all that tension, okay, we're just going to back off a bit, and it felt like maybe they took their pedal off the gas.
I agree, keep the momentum going a little bit, yeah. Good pacing. Faster, more intense.
Faster, more intense. See, this is why you stick around. I can see this show. Not every show is a winner, folks, but I do see us sticking this landing. As much as we want the Bad Batch to stick the landing, we want to make sure that this show sticks the landing well. I just love the blank looks I'm getting, like, and anyway.
You're crossing over to my bedtime now, so I think I gotta put a pin in it.
It's time for Dr. Cass to take the lightsaber home and get ready for bed, and maybe, you know, get a couple of swipes in with that blade and call it at any rate. This has been fun, and like I said, it's nice to be able to walk through some of these because I do think that I have a little higher, you know, rating for this than before, but it is kind of nice to be able to talk through this, and I'll be very, like I said, very curious of, like, you know, because I'm sure that you're gonna be talking about it on your podcast, Anthony, but some of the other ones, as far as, like, you know, I think we've mined about all we could out of this, but I'll be curious what other people think about this as well. But before we kind of end up, I'm curious, what Pringles cans rating are you giving this episode, Anthony?
I apologize. Out of how many Pringles
out of 10
can I give it? Out of 10. Okay, perfect. I'll give this an 8. I think this, again, is a solid episode. It'd sit there at that B level for me. So I think an 8 out of 10 Pringles cans is perfect for this. And I hope to enjoy all I'd probably eat all 8 out of 10. all 8 Pringles cans while I'm enjoying this episode, and then look forward to the following episode after that. Because just think about this. When we're watching this through, right, when we're not watching it week to week, and this is you're just waiting 15 seconds for the next episode to start playing, I don't think we'll be thinking a whole lot about the things that we had about this issue episode with pacing and choices that they made, choices they didn't make. We'll just keep moving along as they head into this final hour, hour and a half, hour 20 of this series that they've got left. So keep the train rolling.
Keep the juggernaut rolling.
Keep the juggernaut. That's right.
Merriam-Webster defines
juggernaut.
I think that's very smart, and to note that they give the lucky influencer class that gets all the episodes, they got all of them. So they did have the 15 seconds, and then they get to play the next one. So mm-hmm. I do think the experience changes a lot for that, and why some of the critical reaction is sometimes a little higher.
Ready. I'm getting ready.
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think I was at a 9 last week, and while I did like this episode a lot, I'm going down a little bit this week. So I'm going to go 8.5 though, because I really did like the choreography of the chase and the, you know, the gunship chasing. I liked Fee's ship a lot. I'm sure we had seen mm-hmm. it before, but I got a good look at it this time, and I was like, oh, that's a really cool ship design. It's a little kind of shuttle Tidarian, a little kind of cargo hauler. It really works. And so I had a great time. So I'm going 8.5.
I think initially I was coming in right around the 7 mark. But I think I'll take it up to an 8, because I do think, you know, and you brought up a really great point, Greg, that yes, you know, when we're talking about like the expectations that we were kind of having for this, you know, when you heard everybody going, you're not ready, you're not ready. And I maybe wasn't ready for today's episode to be like this, but you're right. When you're watching, when they're probably watching those things, and I'm sure they were not waiting, you know, that between each episode, they were going through. So they might have actually kind of like, okay, and then went on to the next and kind of maybe forgot about this. So I'd like to go back to like, okay, blast points, explain this one. I'm curious now what you think about this one separately. But no, I'm not going to. Great, great podcast. But it is, like I said, it's curious watching it that way as opposed to watching it this. And then, yeah, what were they saying you're not ready for? Yes, last week and other that. But I would say I'll keep it around an 8. I won't go too much higher than that, because I think there was some missed opportunities that they could have really kept the pedal down. And maybe, you know, if you have the tank, use it. If you have the juggernaut, use it. There we go. One last thing. If you weren't already playing the juggernaut drinking game, that one just pushed you over the edge, and now you need to go sober up. At any rate, all righty. Well, this has been a lot longer than I thought it was going to be, but
was that on anyone's bingos cards? Was it going
No one, including me, thought this episode was going to go more than 40 minutes, but there you go. But, you know, we had a great conversation tonight, and it was really awesome to kick off. It was great to kind of catch up with and get to know Anthony a little better. And it's one of the things I've loved about doing this show with Greg, is that we get to bring people on. And I think each show kind of has its own characteristic, whether it's you have Frank on, whether you have Jen on, or you know, PT and all the folks that have been on this season and in past as well. It's really fun, because I think it kind of makes each show a bit unique. So I want to say thank you for coming on and going through this, because this was a fun one. But Anthony, where can people find you online? I know we talked about that a little bit, but let's remind them, since that was right. a long time since we talked about that first part. So for those who are still listening, let's have at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again for having me on. I mean, this was such a blast to chat about this episode with you both, and also to get some definitions from the Merriam-Webster's Dictionary. We got a Monuments Men reference in there, too. We got a lot of Hudson Hawk hype, which I haven't
too
seen that
much
movie,
Hudson
so
Hawk hype.
I will say this is a great advertisement to go check out that 1991 classic in some regards, which I've just learned that Frank Stallone is in that movie, too.
Yes.
So what a great cast. Gotta
I'm telling you,
check this film
star-studded
out.
Top to bottom, folks.
Wow. Learn something new every day. And definitely with this new Bad Batch episode, we got some fun here. But if you like what you heard today, you can, of course, hear me and my wife during the Bad Batch conversations while they're still going on on Force Ghost Conversations, which again, you can find us on any podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher and Google Podcasts don't exist anymore. So anywhere else you can find podcasts that still distributes the RSS file, we're there. And you can also find us on all social media platforms, including X, Hive, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Just search for Force Ghost Conversations and I'll be there, and you can communicate with us. Whatever you liked about this episode, what you didn't like, let's have a great conversation about it.
Excellent, excellent. Greg?
So starting in about 5 minutes, I'll be in my living room renting Hudson Hawk. Stop by, because I also haven't seen it, but it sounds like a fun time. So, I'm pretty much anywhere online. I'll just steal the same thing from Anthony. Just look online anywhere I am. It's Ion Cannon, EYEONCANON. And you can find me mostly on Instagram, and I'm more and more on Threads these days. I'm enjoying the kind of dynamics over there, even if sometimes it sounds like feels like you're shouting into the void of nothingness. But every once in a while, there's a fun echo or somebody comes back at you, so it's a good time. I am sometimes on Long Take Review, which we did Monkey Man this week, which is a really great movie. Fun movie. So people should check that out and check out our episode, which is hosted on Jen's Substack, longtakereview .substack.com. Somewhere, just search Substack for Long Take Review. And then my Wheel of Time podcast continues on. We are just past the halfway point in book 4. So I think that means we only have another decade to go. So we'll keep at that as well. That's called Through the Glass Columns. And it is a fun time. And if you've ever wanted to try Wheel of Time, I know for me, I started that show because I had never read any of it and was curious about it. And we'll be your book club. So you can grab your paperback copy of the first book and we read 2 chapters each episode. And they drop about once a week, and there's a big back catalog, so it's fun, and it's something I bragged about professionally, and then when I got my promotion this week, they mentioned it, so I was like, hey, all right, nice. Somebody looked it up, right. All right, so hey-o. Pretty fun.
All righty, and if you have a question for the Breakfast Pack, and if there will be another episode of this, you can find me on the socials, Twitter, X, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, just because, as well as Hive, and occasionally Substack, at Rebel Base Card. I did want to thank Sam Tashima and Kyle Scully for once again always kind of probing us with questions and things like that, and I love it whenever we get comments and questions. And hopefully we'll get some instead of like, hey, if you want to review the show, if you want to give a 5-star review, maybe not for this episode, but I'm sure we've had great 5-star episodes on this one. You can help out the show. People find it, because why not? Why wouldn't you want to have people find out more about Hudson Hawk? I'm just saying it's a good movie. But anyway, alrighty. I'd love to have this go longer, but I think I'd lose Greg. He'd fall right. He's saying no, no. So I like it when we've definitely hit the wall on this one, and we have some sleep and some other podcasts to check up on. So we will be back after the next episode with more questions. I promise you, better questions, at least from me. I'm going to do a lot more homework off the next one. But I'll be curious, because 3 episodes left, kids. There's going to be some interesting things happening. Until then, for Anthony King and Greg Cass, I'm Greg McLaughlin. We're going to return you now to your podcast playlist, as well as your iTunes. No, I'm not going to say it. Already in progress. No more Hudson Hawk stuff. I'm done. Thanks, folks.
This podcast is not affiliated in any way with Topps, Disney, or Star Wars, nor is it endorsed by Disney or Lucasfilm, and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. All names and sounds and any other related items are properties of their respective trademarks and or copyright holders here in the U.S. and abroad. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com.
As I pre-roll this. And folks, don't think we haven't pulled this trick before. Go back a couple of clicks and you'll hear an episode where we go a full half hour before the show. So this is one of the reasons why the dozens of fans we have just kind of trickle away. But anyway, all right. Here we go. Try to get excited about this episode. All right.
I actually really like this episode. I don't know what's happening. All right. All right. We'll
get on to it. I liked it too. How dare you put a Bad Batch episode in my Bad Batch feed? Come on. All right. I'm gonna put this. This is not how this show ever really goes, Anthony. You're in for a treat.
I'll take it. I'm here for a special occasion. Let's go.
All right.